Welcome to the Designer Boss Podcast.
Listen, learn, lol, and level up with the ultimate success guide for web and graphic designers.
My name is Anna Dower. I'm a cake-loving, success-slaying graphic design mentor.
And I'm Emma Kate, your personal sensei for mastering the wonderful world of web.
Together, we'll show you how to harness our tried and tested experiences and hard-earned lessons while you soak up everything we know about building a successful design business. Hi, and welcome to the Designer Boss Podcast. I'm Anna Dower, and today I am chatting to someone very special. This guy is a brand identity designer, podcast host, and creative mentor, and he is one of our headlining speakers at the Designer Boss Summit in February 2021. Say hello to Regan, also known as Frank, from G'day Frank. Hello.
G'day, how are we doing?
Good. So, do I call you Regan or do I call you Frank?
I would say Frank because it's actually Reagan.
Oh, Reagan.
and this is probably a good point to bring up, is that this is why I tend to introduce myself as Frank to new people. Not because I don't like my name, but for the ease of use for those that I interact with, that I can give a name that is more easily to pronounce, to spell, to remember, much like what it is I do for branding for people. So
Frank it is. That Frank makes it easier. Let's go with it. Yeah, now that I've introduced you with a fancy bio and screwing up your name, tell everyone what you do and who you serve, because I feel like when you say it in your own words, it's different to the fancy bio.
It is, and my bio tends to change every time someone says, oh, can you send me a bio? I'm like, what do I feel like I'm going to say today? Like, how do I feel about myself? So I'm a 32-year-old male from Sydney, or west of Sydney in the Blue Mountains of Australia. I run a design business called G'day Frank. It's a brand identity design business catering to small to medium businesses of all sizes, even personal brands from both in Australia and around the world. I've been doing that now for 2.5 years since quitting a full-time job that was, I think, 7 years, like on the dot. Working in TV production. And I was like, okay, I want to start my own business. And here I am 2.5 years later with that business still going strong, and a wife behind me running that with me as my business partner slash someone that keeps me in check, keeps my ego at bay. And we have two little kids, a newborn daughter and a 3-year-old son. And just work from home. It's a nice, easy lifestyle.
Yeah.
In terms of, I guess, who I cater to specifically, I'm looking to work with those that are in the tech space. I have a bit fair interest in technology and what I can do to help those kind of businesses stand out, because there are that many of them. And my kind of style tends to fit their kind of aesthetic, clean, minimal kind of iconography, I guess you might say, in terms of a logo, but also trying to jazz things up with a nice message and a good identity behind it that people can connect with. And then into 2021, looking to even niche a bit into podcast branding. So for those that are starting up a podcast or want to elevate their podcast, maybe the new look, feel, all that kind of stuff, is have a see if people need that kind of service.
Yeah, that's a cool niche. So did you always know that you wanted to be a designer? Because I was one of those freaky kids that just always knew. And it was like I just had my eye on the prize and that's what I always wanted. But, you know, when I started out, it wasn't all that I had hoped it had been, would be, because I spent like 10 years designing real estate ads, which is not really design. It's more like just being, you know, a monkey, a Mac monkey, just moving stuff around in a box. So did you always know that you wanted to do something creative? And
Yeah. I mean, I think probably a lot of people might relate to this is like when you're a kid and you start drawing and your mum says, oh, that's a really nice drawing, and they put it up on the wall. And I remember like drawing Ninja Turtles as a kid.
Oh,
like,
me too.
Yeah, I'm a hopeless drawer, but like total 80s, 90s kid drawing, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles of, you know, Michelangelo and Donatello and Raphael. And my grandma thought I was amazing because she didn't know what Ninja Turtles were, and they thought she thought that I knew all the, you know, Renaissance artists. I was just like,
no, I mean, man.
No, no, no. He's drawing turtles.
Yeah.
One would say. So for me, I think the whole designer thing came into it when I first saw Toy Story.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in a movie cinema, Dad took me to it with my sister, and I was just like, what is this? Like, this is next level kind of Disney animation type of stuff. And I mean, I think I was in primary school at that stage, and I was like, oh, this would be interesting. And then did visual arts in high school. I was like, I want to be an animator. There's like ILM, there's Animal Logic here in Australia. Maybe I could get a job there. And then realized what it actually involved. And I was like, wow, this is next level. Like learning all these applications of 3D modeling and all the stuff that was involved, I was like, nah, I don't know if that's
too hard.
Too hard. And so I leaned more into the graphic design side of things in my final year in high school. I was like, this could be something.
Mm.
And I had a few people like, oh, can you design me like an album cover? I want to be a singer, or I want to create like a logo or something. I'm like, okay, I'll give that a whirl. I think I have Photoshop, or I can get like a pirated version of Photoshop and figure that out. And figured it out in 2 years, my final 2 years of high school, and was like, okay, well, where can I go with this? And looked at different universities or colleges, like private colleges. And my dad was like, look, mate, get a degree. You know, if this doesn't work out, you'll have a degree there. It'll show you the you know, tenacity that you've taken 4 years to, you know, apply yourself, depending on what you end up as a job after it. I was like, okay, fine, I'll go do university. So I ended up picking got into with the lowest UAI ever, but still got into university because I was just all art stuff. Like, it wasn't maths or science or anything like that. It just bored me to tears. And did a Bachelor of Visual Communication or Design and Visual Communication, and applied myself so much that finished up that degree at the top of the class just because I was like hell bent. I was like, this is my shtick. Like, I think this is it. Where I could take that again was another question. It was like, okay, does this go into advertising? Because that seems like the likely, you know, place. That's all I really know. Are there like design agencies? I'm not too sure. So when I finished, you know, university, I was applying to like 20 or 30 different places, and most of them were ad agencies. I got one interview, and I was told that I didn't have enough experience, and it was a junior design role.
Oh, which, yes.
You know, to me is just such a head scratcher.
So brutal, hey.
Yeah, it's like, well, how the hell do you get a start in this game?
Mm-hmm.
And that really sort of knocked the confidence around, and I started doing a couple of freelance jobs, and one ended up being an in-house design job. Well, it was just a one-off job. I went into for a TV production company. They make like X Factor, Australian Idol. They used to make MasterChef, like all these big reality kind of shows, and Neighbours, so some dramas as well. And they called me back the next day after doing some work with them and said, yeah, we just want your details for a contract. And I was like, what? What contract? You know, to come and work for us. I was like, oh, okay. So see you Monday? They're like, yeah, see you Monday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I stayed there for 7 years on the day, like to the day, working as an in-house designer, creating identities for TV shows.
That's a pretty good first gig. I mean, it beats real estate ads.
It was shit hot, I got to say. Like, it just putting yourself into a landscape of something that you'd never really considered. Obviously, you watch it on, you know, stuff on TV and you kind of get a little bit of it, but seeing the behind the scenes was kind of interesting. I felt it was very similar to my upbringing. My father was still is in the music industry, like working with big tour, you know, companies, bringing out, you know, like the likes of Elton John and Rolling Stones and all those kind of big ass acts. So it was a very similar kind of behind the scenes sort of feel. But I was there creating identities for those kind of businesses. Sorry, those kind of shows for this particular business to pitch to, you know, the TV networks of Australia and even overseas, which like led to things like creating decals or what you call livery or livery for like aeroplanes. And I was like, okay, that's something different. I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to figure it out. Let's do it. And sure enough, you know, there's a Jetstar plane in Singapore airport just taking off with my artwork on the side of it. I'm like, holy hell.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
There's a portfolio piece and a half. So, it got to the end of 7 years. I was just like, look, I've always wanted to run my own business and I'm not so fond of working for someone. Like, the 7 years was fine. I had a lot of different challenges, but it was a lot of just self-initiated kind of drive of work to get done. I had a deadline from someone above me, but it was just me. Like, I was the only real sort of designerly creative person. So it was very independent, I guess you might say. So I was just like, okay, I could do this, but for myself, my own dime or my own dollar at home. And, you know, with a growing family, at that stage, we had a 3 month old.
Yeah,
I think he was 3 months old by the time I figured, okay, this is going to happen. And then fast forward 6 months, you know, June 30, I quit my job. And then July 1, I started G'day Frank.
I always think that first kid is like a catalyst. It's like,
yeah,
you're like, fuck this shit. I'm going to work for myself now. Like, you just want the freedom. It's all about the freedom and flexibility, I think. And when you've got that new little person, you're like, I'm not going to do what you tell me to do. I'm going to, you know, I want to do it on my own time now. Because I know that for me, that first child was the catalyst. It was like, yeah, no more of this. No more working for the man.
Yeah, I got to say, it's one of those things that if you're maybe more introverted than extroverted, like I just didn't feel like I fit in into that company culture. I mean, I excelled in the company culture. Like, I got out there. I was like the chief fire warden. I was running a social committee. Like, I was there, but it just never really felt like this was like my place, I guess.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's a bit of an odd one.
It's funny how I feel like I'm an introverted extrovert, if that makes sense. Like,
that's the facade that I put on as an extroverted persona that you would see.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's very introverted. Like, between my family and friends, depending on who the friends are, it's pretty tame. You know, I am much more relaxed and quite more quietly spoken.
Yes.
With some great mates, I'm more, you know, lively and, you know, a bit more of the jester. But when you find a space that's yours and you feel comfortable in, you kind of come out of your shell a bit, and that extroverted nature comes out of what people typically think is an extrovert.
And then people are like, but you seem so confident. You're always, you know, with your podcast, you're doing Facebook Lives, you're doing this. But that's my own space that I created and I make the rules. And I only do it when I feel energized to do it. That's one of the good things about running your own business is you make the rules. And you know, you don't have to be on when a boss tells you, oh, you need to be on now. So at the beginning, we quickly touched on who your ideal client is, but I want to talk more about, like, you haven't really like been in your own business for that long. I think you said 2.5 years, and you seem to have a really clear idea of who your ideal client is. Like, how did you get to that point where you stopped wanting to serve everyone and kind of niche down to who you really want to serve and stick to that, you know, without the fear?
I got to say, it's a real tricky one, and it might not take you 2.5 years. It might take you 2 weeks. It might take you a decade, two decades, who knows? Because there's no pressure on you trying to find what works for you. You can always just, like, taste, try different things and see what works for you and maybe build some experience with particular industries that you find that you can excel in helping. Like, for me, I excelled in helping TV production companies, and I was like the go-to person for that even after, you know, finishing up with that company. I still get contacted for it. I decline it because I'm over it, but, you know, that was my shtick for then. It took me 2 years to think, okay, well, what could my niche be? Because all I keep hearing is people saying, you know, niche, please, you know, if you drill down, you can be super clear in what you want to say. And I'm like, yeah, that's all well and good, but it takes some time to get some real experience and understanding of what that client actually needs. So I still have no idea exactly what a tech client needs, because obviously they're all different, but with experience, with time, in the varied like sectors of that, you know, larger tech space, it's going to take me a while to do. Like, I'm working with a guy at the moment that does, you know, cloud computing and all this kind of stuff, which I've never even really considered. And I'm like, okay, how do I best understand this and apply that in the future? But then it also comes down to things like, if you're thinking about niching, is that niche viable? Like, you know, if it's a cafe, are they going to be able to afford, you know, $5,000-$10,000 branding job or a website or photography session? Like, and is it scalable? Like, is there that many of them that you can reach out to and they need all these services? Obviously, you can think a little less local and a bit more global, like depending on what your service is. Which is what I tend to do now, is put content out in the hopes that anyone can see it around the world. But it's not to say that I don't disregard those that come to me that are outside of that niche. Because if I think I can help that business, if they are a personal brand, like I'm working with a guy in Korea at the moment, he has no business, no service, and I think he just wants to put out stuff for his own dime because he's a self-retired, you know, 30-year-old. And just wants to have an identity to put out, you know, what he wants to help people with. Like, I didn't say no to that. I was like, this is an interesting challenge. Let's see if this is something I could do. Then on the flip side as well, like, if you need the money, you need the money. You'll take what you can get as well. If someone's willing to work with you and pay your rate, then you might be silly to take, you know, not take that. But if you feel like it's going to be a niche that you just have no... you get no inspiration from to really want to help someone in that space, and it just, you know, it's a space that maybe bores you to tears, then have a think about maybe, you know, letting that one go, referring it on to a fellow creative that you know might excel in that.
Often I find the stuff that we don't want to do helps us to find our niche. Like, I feel like you will never reach the destination of your niche. I feel like it's something that will be ever-changing, and it is all about kind of taking baby steps towards it. Like, okay, so I don't like working with florists, they're out now, you know, and you know, and just trying over time to get clearer on what, who you do want to work with and what you want to specialize in. And I do think your brand kind of gives off, like, that's part of your niche as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's very recognizable. It's clean. It's, you know, you got the pops of color and.
Yeah. It's very pink.
Yes. I love it.
It's open enough to be flexible to, if I ever want to change what it is I do, I can shift.
Yes.
I made it that purposeful that it could transition to whatever it is I want to talk about rather than being hyper specific, which you can be hyper specific if you're that passionate about a certain industry and you want to go hell bent into it. And then rebrand maybe later down the track, that's okay. But I think the biggest sort of plus for it is, for niching especially, is that you know what to talk about in your marketing material, in your touch points, in Instagram posts, LinkedIn posts, whatever it might be. But then you can also charge more for it because you are the person that understands that person's problem, that person's industry. Like, why would you go to someone that specializes in, you know, cafes if you're a dentist? It doesn't make quite as much sense. So that if someone does see a higher price and they're comparing the pair with other designers that don't specialize in your niche and they're charging, let's say $2,000 and you're charging $5,000 because you have that expertise, you know, if someone believes that they're going to get a better result because they understand
specifically
them, understand you as the client, yeah, specifically, they're going to feel catered to. And have a bit more trust in that you can deliver, especially if you've got the work to back it up with case studies and testimonials and, you know, that social proof. Yeah, there's a huge amount of plus to it. The drawback is that it takes time to really nail
it. It does, yeah.
Which is why I'm thinking of podcast branding next year, is that I've made podcasts. I understand how to create them, to edit them, to put them out there, to, you know, how I could potentially, you know, create courses, create blog content about it, create Instagram content about it, like real simple, easy tips to just break that stuff down, which is something that in a general branding sense or even a tech brand, like a big kind of scale business, is quite specific and tailored to a specific, you know, business Whereas podcasting, everyone does the same kind of podcast. It's either an interview or it's just a conversation. And it's either based on a person like yourself, Anna, or, you know, a collective group of people having a chat, you know, every couple of weeks, months, days, whatever it is. And that I can drill down onto that person's specific problems, because I've had those problems myself. I can relate to them.
So the niche is basically whatever you do every day that is easiest for you.
Yeah.
And often, like, we go on this journey, like, I need to go inwards and find my niche. I need to do all this personal soul searching. But often it is the thing that you do every single day, and that is absolutely easiest for you. Yep. Just like you said, you know the ins and out of podcasting. Mm. And I know there are a lot of designers out there that do the same thing every day, that flows really easily for them, and they're overlooking it because they're like, oh, well, everyone knows how to do that. They can just Google it, or no one will pay me for that, or you know what I mean? But, yeah, don't discount it.
And there's the thing, like, with niching as well. There's the two verticals of vertical and horizontal niching, where you can specifically niche down to a service that you offer, so be it branding, photography, whatever, or, and it could be even hyper-focused, like just doing logos, just doing headshot photography, just doing landing pages for websites. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the horizontal, which is the typical, you know, industry that you want to work with, and you can get as hyper-focused as you want. You could be female entrepreneurs that run coaching clinics, you know, in Australia. You could get really specific there if the niche is viable, because at the end of the day, you're running a business as well. That can't discount the fact that if it's not going to make you money, then it's not it's not going to be a great niche to go down, because you're going to run out of clients very quickly. So there's a lot of considerations, but there is, if you can find one that ticks all the boxes, that's, you know, and this is my other thing as well. I keep wanting to harping on about this, is that if someone else is doing that niche, don't feel like you can't as well.
Yeah, yeah. I hear that a lot. But such and such has an e-course on that, and I don't want to create one because it already exists. That's BS.
It is. Like, I had the same qualms in my own head, like, just like, do I do this whole branding for podcasting or not? Because I heard a guy talk about that he did it, and then I talked to design community that I run, and all of them in that group are like, man, just do it. Like, it's not, you know, it's not his territory, or it's not her territory. You know, it's a big enough world. There's enough of these, you know, people trying to do podcasts. What are you worried about? And I was like, okay.
Yeah. So, like, a bit of a random kind of curious question.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you make your money? Because I know, because people often don't understand what I do. And, you know, when it's too hard to explain to people what you do, you kind of just say, oh, yeah, I'm a graphic designer. When in actual fact, I pretty much do no graphic design these days. Like, it is 0% of my income. But I just say graphic designer because it's easier than explaining. I'm a creative mentor that works with graphic design entrepreneurs, blah, blah, blah. And I do think it's important to have more than one way to make money.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to hear how you make money.
Yeah, well, given 2020 at the moment, some of the income is government support.
Yes.
Which has been handy, I got to say. So that's covering some wages there. But the brunt of it is client revenue.
Uh-huh.
So for jobs, you know, they vary in price depending on what's required. But, yeah, the bulk of that, you know, revenue stream is from client projects. And they're typically billed now upfront in a way that's phased project pricing, whether or not your listeners have heard of this concept of, rather than taking, you know, a 50% deposit and then 50% on completion, I'll do it now where I'll take the money up front for each phase of a project. So if it's a branding project, I'll take 25% for, say, discovery, and then 25% for the strategy identity, like core identity part of things, then for 25% for messaging, and then 25% before I start the visual identity.
Okay.
So that's how I've started rolling that, which has worked much more beneficially cash flow wise, because I'm not waiting for a client to, you know, sign off on changes, revisions, the final, you know, piece that you put out there, which can drag things out. You're getting paid up front for it. So if the project halts, you're all good. In addition to that income, it's things like affiliate commissions. So if I spruik someone else's product or service, like in Black Friday, just gone, I was just tallying it up today. I was talking to my wife about it. I think we did about $1,000 just in affiliate commission.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Over three different products that we talked about. So that's, you know, fairly low effort return over, you know, a weekend of just putting some stuff on social media. Yes, it's your time, you know, to talk about things and get yourself on camera and everything. But for me, that's like, well, that's a nice little extra bit of income.
Yeah.
I have a paid design community. There's, I think, about 20 or 30 of us that meet up each week and have a chat about our design kind of business life. And it pays for the platform, but anything extra, you know, goes into the pocket. But that typically I don't really see as revenue. I want to put that back into that community.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of just sits in the bank account, basically. And then the last one is like speaking gigs, you know, being paid here and there to talk and chat and share knowledge with, you know, others like myself. That's kind of it. In the future, though, I'm hoping to create some, like, courses. I've got one that I've been talking about for bloody months now about how to create, you know, animated GIFs for Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
And Facebook, which I've shot it. I just haven't edited it. It just life and business has got in the way. So it's sitting there waiting to be finished. But, yeah, even courses for like podcasting, how to start a podcast and all that kind of stuff. And my big ambition, which won't happen for years now, is to write a book. Because for me, like starting a design business, you know, in Australia, there wasn't really anything contextually about that kind of experience of what you would need to do. And like I've written a small ebook on my other website, G'day Design Life, for people to like how you could start a design business in, you know, 8 hours, but it's like a 10-page, you know,
a lead snippet. Magnet,
yeah, kind of snippet of what you could do. But, you know, turning that kind of experience of starting a business into a narrative to show, you know, loosely based on what my experience was, but, you know, ham it up a bit with a bit more drama because it wasn't all that.
Drama sells.
Drama sells. And turn that into something that, you know, could be another income stream if I get myself into action to do that. So, yeah. Like there's endless possibilities of what you could do. Like you there could even sell, you know, mock-ups and hand lettering kind of fonts or whatever it is. Like there's so much endless possibility of what you can do now. It's whether or not you have the time to do it outside of what it is you do for client work. But if you see it as some passive income that you do it once and you can leave it there and it can
keep sit doing there
and keep doing it. Like my wife has a Skillshare course. Like we shot it now. Garage. She's a sewist, like she, you know, seamstress, that kind of thing. Mm. She calls herself a sewist. I think that's like a self-proclaimed title of creating clothing and all that kind of stuff. And she did a little small course on creating a tote bag.
Yeah.
That sits on there. We don't promote it. We don't spruik it or anything. And it just generates like $10 a month.
Yeah.
And it just sits there. Like it's nothing amazing, but it just sits there. We don't have to do anything with it because Skillshare just promotes it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So yeah, that's how the money's coming in. So
yeah. Oh, well, thank you for clearing that up. It's good to have all those ideas and just slowly implement them one at a time. I also have a book that's half written.
Nice.
That one day I will finish, hopefully.
You'll get there.
Yeah, slowly. So your social media is pretty full on. Like you are really
that's the best way to describe it. Holy shit. Full on. Yeah, but it is.
It's like full on in a really good way, I think. Like you take those sound bites that designers have, you know, those little bits of knowledge, and you make them visual for people and make it really easily digestible. How do you like have the energy and time and all that sort of stuff to make it happen?
Yeah, this is the thing I say to a lot of people. Like if I could bottle what it is I do into something and sell it, it'd be amazing. But it takes such tenacity in your own right to want to do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like if we rewind to, I think it was March last year. Actually, no, it was January last year. during this sort of Christmas break that we're about to go into, I took the whiteboard out into our lounge room. I sat down or stood up, and my wife sat down, and I just said, I need to put something out to market this business. What am I going to do?
Mm.
And it was like, okay, I can do social media content. That seems achievable. I can do blog posts. I'm not a great writer, but I can give it a crack. And, you know, is there ads? Do we really want to pay for ads? Is that viable? All this kind of thing. And yeah, the priority was social media. It was like, okay, well, what can I really come up with here to talk about? Like, obviously, I have to talk about branding because that's what it is I do. It just seemed like the obvious. And so I did that, but I broke it down into, you know, each week was a different topic about branding, and there was 5 posts each week relating to it. Just in, and this was before carousels even came along. They came along about 6 months later, but it was just a single individual frame on Instagram that was something to do with either, you know, color, type, simplicity of a logo, all these different elements to creating an identity for a brand, for business owners to maybe see. It ended up being designers all seeing it, and that's like makes up 99% of my following is other fellow creatives. But it was something that I made a non-negotiable. So yeah.
There's an ethos in that.
Yeah.
Because other designers want to create what you create.
Yeah. I'm sure there is. And that's probably the big thing that we talked about before is just taking it for granted of what you know.
Yeah.
And how to do it. And for me, it was just the first 7 weeks were a bit like, okay. But I found it enjoyable. But then after that 7 weeks, it became habitual. And I think it's something to do with that seven weeks thing about getting into a routine habit. Of stuff. Makes a habit. And it really did for me because every night after I put my son to bed at 7 o'clock, I'd come back into my office or at my computer, depending on where we were living at the time, and making a piece of content. I would write a ridiculously long caption, which my wife would roll her eyes out at because she was like, this is way too long. No one's going to read that. I was like, nah, stuff it. I'm just going to leave it.
Mm.
I don't mind. Is it, 'cause it's just a single image to go with. And it might've been a quote. It might've been, you know, my peanut head in a photo holding a lightsaber that had something to do with branding for some reason. All these different kind of things that I was doing creatively. Like I even pulled out a glass of water and then dripped some ink into it. And it was like a hallmark back to an excerpt from a Seth Godin book about this particular example he gave about dye, about how, you know, something can transform. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that, but just some really weird creative stuff that I was coming up with. And it was getting traction, but traction for the, I guess, the wrong kind, because they weren't my target market being other designers. But it gives some validation to realize that I knew what I was kind of talking about, and learning things as I went, working with clients, working with or interacting with other designers of what they're going through and struggling with. To really highlight what the benefit is of branding could be. And it took, I reckon it took 12 months for a client to find that content and contact me because of it. But I did it for the love of it. I really didn't see it as a short-term marketing game. It was a long-term branding game of establishing a personality in alignment with what it is I do as a service. And for that first, and from March until October, I hid behind my logo a lot of the time. And it was just my GF, and it was pink and blue branding at the time. And I was like, yep, I'm just going to position myself as a company, make myself look like Pentagram or Landor and be like all these things, even though I didn't want to create an agency like that. I just wanted to be a solo person and still want to be that. And then realized I got to show my face a lot more. Like I was kind of here and there, but I even look back at my stories because you can look back like up to 2 years of your previous stories. And I didn't get onto stories for a good 8 months. Like it was like November last year, I think I started getting on stories. And I was like, what the hell? I was making video content before then, but not that impromptu video kind of connection with that audience and until then. So it took some time to open up, but I got to say that as both creating that content and showing up on camera in all these different ways has boosted my confidence exponentially because I can get on here and talk verbatim about the things that I am passionate about, you know, at the drop of a hat. because I know, you know, I either know my shit about what it is I do for clients, or I know my shit about how to help other creatives because I've been through those trenches. It just gives you that ridiculous confidence, and you start getting this ego comes into it as well about, okay, yeah, I'm going to create some content. It's going to be absolute fire. And then it just falls flat and you're like, you're an absolute dickhead. Like, remove that, get that ego out of the way and just do it for the love of it. And that it's taken me a while to do so. And I think the biggest detriment has been comparison, you know, with other creatives doing all this. And for me, I was looking at people that were, you know, getting these big followings really quickly, doing this whole Instagram growth strategy bullshit and going, trying to go, okay, well, how do I do that? How do I keep up with that kind of crap? And then realize, what the fuck are you doing? Like, that's just stupid. They're doing it for a whole different reason for what you're doing it for. There's a totally different intention, totally different audience. Stop trying to be that. So I have a post-it note still stuck to my iMac here that says, you know, you're your own competition, mate. You know?
Yeah.
Look in the mirror, you know, that's your competition.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
So I mentioned at the beginning that you're going to be one of the speakers at our Designer Boss Summit in February, which is so exciting. It's going to be 3 days of designers talking about design business, helping you guys work smarter and not harder in your design business. So what will you be talking about at the summit?
My topic is verbatim here, getting design clients to love and obey you. I'm not so aligned with the word obey because it's a bit full on.
I think I wrote that.
But what I'd like to, I guess, talk about in that kind of space is that you mentioned before, Anna, of working with clients and not being told what to do.
Yes.
I'm not told what to do by my clients, never.
Yeah, you shouldn't be as a designer.
Yeah, no, this is a relationship that you're working together for a mutual common goal. Not someone, it's not a one-way street, it's a two-way street. Mm-hmm. And what I'm hoping to do is kind of identify some key points of what can put you in the best stead in your client's eyes to be the trusted expert in the room. Because this is one of the other misconceptions, I guess, for designers is to realize that you might know way more about business than your clients actually do.
Mm-hmm.
In general. So if you've been a business owner for a couple of years, you know, maybe even 6 months, and you've read up a hell of a lot about what business is and does to, you know, generate revenue, profit, all the rest of it, you might have such a better understanding. And you've got to bring that to the table. You've got to have a business conversation. You've got to be able to charge in a way that makes you on the front foot rather than having the ball in their court. But there are opportunities where you allow your client in to make it a collaborative process. But once it oversteps that mark where it becomes, you know, them telling you what to do and art directing when they've never picked up, you know, a pencil to draw something or, you know, ever opened Photoshop before to tell you how to do what you do, that's when it becomes an unamicable problem. So we want to try and see how we can fix that.
And it's not about being like a bossy bitch or anything like that. It's just kind of gaining their respect.
Correct.
And trust.
And you can do that in so many facets even before even having that first conversation.
Yes.
And so it's looking at all these different things as quick as I can in 30 minutes, I think it is, that I have to think about all this. So I'm going to try and get the best points possible and then we can do some Q&A after it. But, It can take experience, though, and take some confidence to get to that point, though. That's, I think, the big thing to realize is that it's not going to just, I'm not going to tell you something in half an hour and you're going to do it and then it's just going to solve all your problems. It's going to take, you know, some real guts for you as the design business owner expert in the room to really just, you know, be that boss, be that designer boss lady.
Yeah, you know it.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. It's been so good to chat to you, Frank, and I can't wait for you to be part of the summit. I know everyone's going to learn so much from you.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Designer Boss podcast with Anna Dower and Emma Kate.
If you'd like to learn more about us and our upcoming digital summit for graphic and web designers, head to our website, designerboss.co.